Cunningham across half court, crosses over on the dribble to Tyler Schoen, right wing. Tyler between the legs, back to Cunningham, tries another one. Put it on the board again. Kylan Cunningham with two straight threes. He's got four in the game, 16 points, matching his season high. And Lakeside leads by 15, 42-27.
That was some of the action last night on KD Kunch 94 and KDKunch94.com. Dusty with a call from Kensington. Some special Monday night basketball. And I'll let Dusty recap that and all the games from last night. We'll look ahead to tonight.
Yes, we had Thunder Ridge and Lakeside splitting their matchups last night. On the girls' side, it was Thunder Ridge winning 61-31. In the boys' game, Lakeside wins 52-44. Thunder Ridge jumped out to a 14-0 lead in that girls' game. Lakeside had cut it to 8 there in the second quarter at one point, actually to 6, I should say, at 18-12. But Thunder Ridge extended it back out to 14 by halftime and, again, go on to win it by 30. 15 points for Cameron Ritzky, the freshman, to lead Thunder Ridge, and 13 points added by Rainey Raby for the Lady Longhorns. She made three threes on the night. Thunder Ridge now 9-2 overall, 6-1 in the Northern Plains League as they won their sixth straight in the series against Lakeside. For the Lady Knights, they dropped to 1-5 overall, 1-5 in the Northern Plains League. Nobody in double figures. 8 points for Taylor Betts to lead the way for Lakeside. H&R block of the game went to Lauren Brummett from Lakeside. Also in the boys game, again, a 52-44 win for the Knights. 16 points, as you heard there, from Kylan Cunningham on that last cut there. Wyatt Eberle also had 16 points. They each tied their season high as Tyler Schoen was also in double figures with 11. 9 of those came in the first quarter for Schoen. So, again, a very balanced scoring as far as at the top there for Lakeside as they go on to win it by 8 points. They're now 3-3 overall, 3-2 in the Northern Plains League. Their 10th straight win over Thunder Ridge. Eberle and Cunningham were our athletes of the game. Block of the game went to Jay Schoen from H&R Block and Beloit there for Lakeside. And then for Thunder Ridge, they were led by Jace Randall, 12 points, new career high for him on 4 3-pointers. And Dylan Bice had 11. Thunder Ridge drops to 4-7 and 3-4. In the Northern Plains League. So again, the split last night between Thunder Ridge and Lakeside in Kensington. Other scores from last night in the area. It was, the Rock Hills girls winning over Tescott 38-27. Smith Center girls beat Superior Nebraska 55-38. Miley Raby and Talon Rentschler each scored 18 points for Smith Center. On the boys' side, Rock Hills winning over Tescott 57-16. Davion McDonald with 20 and Mason Heiger had 11 for the Grizzlies. And Smith Center boys winning over Superior Nebraska 40-34. It's the first win of the season for Smith Center on the boys' side and the first win for Dana Weltmer as the head coach for her for the Smith Center boys basketball team. So congratulations to the Redmen on the win on Monday. And then Abilene wins over Concordia 59-57 in boys' action as well. So let's look at what the scores were from last night's high school basketball action. As Wade said, we do have high school hoops coming up tonight. KD Kunch 94, Lakeside at St. John's Tip. They'll have pregame coverage beginning at 5:50 and tip off at 6. Or the girls' game will start at 6, and then the boys will follow here tonight on KD Kunch 94. Then on Z96.3 The Lake, we're hoping. Also, for sure, we'll have online video stream at ncksports.com with the Lloyd Trojan Channel. We'll let it southeast of Saline. Varsity coverage beginning again at 6 o'clock there for the girls' game and the boys to follow. Other games tonight, Pike Valley at Osborne, Rock Hills at Natoma, Sylvan Lucas is at Chase, Thunder Ridge at Logan Palco, Lincoln at Southern Cloud, and Concordia is at Riley County tonight in high school hoops action. So let's look at the what's going on here this evening. We also do want to pass along. We'll have high school wrestling locker room chats tonight on KD Kunch 94 beginning around 5:10 to 5:15. We'll talk with the coaches of Beloit, Osborne, and Smith Center Wrestling here this evening. You can always listen to those online at KDKunch94.com as well.
We'll also have district wrestling reports coming up on Friday on KD Kunch 94 and KDKunch94.com. The matchups tonight on the radio, it is Lakeside at St. John's Tipton. Leah Bergman, head coach of the Lady Blue Jays, excited about the matchup with Lakeside.
It'll be another good game for us. You know, any chance we have to play is a good opportunity for us. They're going to be tough. You know, they're a good team in our league, and our girls get pumped up to play league teams, and league teams get pumped up to play us. So they're going to give us their best shot, and we're going to have to come out ready to play.
Of course, when you play the Blue Jays at St. John's Tipton on the girls' side of things, you got to account for Lauren Dubert. Mr. Eberle, Travis Eberle, almost called him Wyatt. Travis Eberle
I had to delete it.
There you go. Travis Eberle, well aware of Miss Dubert.
Lauren's just one of them kids that gets better every year, and she works hard, and, you know, and we have to try to contain her, you know, as well as we can. I mean, you're never going to shut Lauren down. Lauren's too good of a ball player. She's strong, and, you know, she's athletic. She can handle the ball and shoot the ball. But the rest of the team, you know, they got a lot of girls with some length, you know. They got long arms, they rebound and hustle, and they play scrappy, and, you know, we just got to be prepared. And, you know, it's going to be a tough test for us.
And Lance Bergman on the boys' side getting ready for the matchup against Lakeside tonight in Beloit, which you can hear on Katy Country 94 and KatyCountry94.com. And Coach Bergman says, hey, Lakeside, very talented, could very well be the best team in the league, or at least that's what he thought before the year.
You're talking about a team that, if you'd asked me before all these issues and quarantine and stuff like that, I'd have probably put Lakeside right at the top, definitely in the top three, probably even the number one team in the league going into this year, just from experience and the players they have. So we're going to have to rebound from this last game. We're going to have to hit some shots against them because they're a good shooting team, and they're just going to get better the more they play.
And for Drew Dusky, head coach of Lakeside, concerned about the Blue Jays' size.
They got way more size than we do, so we're definitely going to have to play tough and box out and rebound and not give them second-chance opportunities around the basket. And, you know, they've lost some talent and some shooters, but they still got kids that can put the ball in the hole. And, you know, you can't rest on any of them, and they're going to be quick. And I know Coach Bergman's going to have them playing good defense, and we're going to have to take care of the ball.
Lakeside St. John's Tipton tonight. Quick synopsis, very briefly, Dusty.
A couple games here. St. John's Tipton girls obviously are a favorite tonight with Lakeside coming in on a five-game losing streak. And, you know, St. John's Tipton hasn't played for a week on both the boys and girls side, though, so might be a little bit rusty there. But the boys game, again, it's another game in this league that you're looking at could go either way. It just depends on which team comes out and shoots the best, plays the better defense, really, and makes the least mistakes down the stretch. That's what we have been seeing with some of these teams, is make sure you can finish games when you have leads, and we'll see which team can do that tonight with Lakeside and St. John's Tipton here this evening.
Lakeside, St. John's Tipton, and Beloit tonight on Katy Country 94 and KatyCountry94.com. Live video stream, Beloit at Southeast Saline, Battle of Trojans. The girls of Beloit looks like they get to play finally for the first time since last Tuesday after two of their games were postponed due to COVID-19 quarantines with the opposing teams. Beloit girls and boys might be even more shorthanded tonight due to just some sickness that's going around. So it's just always a challenge this year. There's no other way around it. Beloit at Southeast Saline. Southeast Saline girls won over Beloit by 30. The Southeast Saline boys beat Beloit in Beloit's first game of the year by 37. So it's going to be a tough matchup for Beloit. Southeast is very experienced, very talented on both the girls and boys side of the floor. And Beloit, of course, we know is young and experienced and really, in essence, rebuilding to work back to where they're usually accustomed to being, and that's near the top or at the top of the league standings. Ryan Eilert, his basketball team now 4-8 on the season. There have been struggles, but the team is improving.
We knew going in to the season what we were up against, and even more with Owen being out now. But I think we've got kids that you know, each game get a little bit better, learn a thing here or there. We still mess up a plenty, and yet I think there are good things happening.
Beloit at Southeast Saline tonight. It is amazing. We're in 2021, and we still have places that can't get a cell signal. And that's an issue at Southeast Saline. I called the secretary today. I said, hey, is the cell signal any better inside your gym? And she started laughing. So that pretty much told me there that it's not much better. So we will, if we have a cell signal, we'll try to do the game on the radio tonight on Z96.3 Lake. If we don't have a cell signal, the streaming is better than it's been in the past. I've had nightmares there before, but it was good for volleyball back in the fall. It was good for junior high basketball in December. They have worked on their streaming and their network there at Southeast. Now they just got to somehow work with a local phone company, I guess, and put up repeaters or towers or whatever, get some kind of signal in there for cell phones. But we should be okay on the live video stream for the JV girls and boys, C-team boys, and girls and boys varsity. So if you want to watch and then, of course, listen to the play-by-play as well for the varsity games tonight, start about 5:50. So if you listen to Z96.3 Lake and we have music and I'm not on, it just means I don't have a cell signal. I can't get out. That wouldn't be much of a broadcast anyway if I was connected and then cutting in and out all the time. So just go to ncksports.com. If people around here don't know that website yet, unless you just moved here, I don't know what to tell you. ncksports.com, all right, stands for North Central Kansas. ncksports.com. Click on the Beloit Trojan link. There's a Trojan logo in the middle on the story. You click on the Beloit Trojan channel. Bookmark it. Bookmark it. I'm still trying to teach my mom how to do that. Bookmark it. It's not that difficult. And it is one thing that's beautiful about the internet is if you have a question, you can type in the question in Google or ask or whatever.com and it'll tell you what to do if I'm not around. So what you do is you bookmark it, you keep it, and then you'll have that link, and then you'll be able to go right to it in the future, and you can click on whatever stream you want to watch, whether it's a JV game, the varsity game, C team, or whatever. It's all there at your disposal. NCKSports.com, be the Blitz Trojan channel. That's how you can follow along tonight. So you can't say I haven't told you how to do it. All right. KU isn't in the top 25. The AP top 25 for the first time since February 2nd, 2009. That was an NCAA record, 231 consecutive weeks. The last AP poll without Duke, without North Carolina, without Kentucky, without KU, and without UCLA was December 18th, 1961. Do you know how many teams they actually ranked back then? They didn't rank 25.
10.
They ranked 10.
Yeah. Yep.
For the first time in almost 60 years, all five of those blue bloods unranked at the same time. Here's another crazy nugget. None. Let me repeat. None of the 13 winningest programs in D1 history are ranked. None.
Wow.
Kentucky, Kansas, North Carolina, Duke, Temple, Syracuse, UCLA, Notre Dame, St. John's, Indiana, Arizona, Utah, Cincinnati. That's the top 13 winningest programs in D1 history in men's basketball, and not a single one of those 13 are ranked. That's crazy.
That is.
That is crazy.
For sure.
Wow. Oh, knowledge is power. KU wins last night over number 23 Oklahoma State, a much-needed win for the Jayhawks. They're now 13-7 overall, 7-5 in the Big 12. And, man, I tell you, David McCormick came up big for the Jayhawks last night in the second half.
Garrett inside the zone to Wilson for three. No, he missed it wide left. Rebound McCormick, though, muscles it right back up and in. David McCormick has dominated here in the second half.
Oh, he was huge. He did great the second half. He, as poor as he was to start the game, he was that good to start the second half. I was proud of him. I thought he did some good things. I thought defensively, other than a couple of plays, I thought his ball screen defense was better. We didn't do much to help him behind the initial ball screen defense early, but I thought he did great. We got to figure out a way to make those uncontested easy baskets early in the game. But, you know, to play that poorly offensively to start the game and you look up and we're down three or whatever, I thought that was a big improvement. And then we kind of guarded the first half, and the second half we probably didn't guard as well, but the lid came off and we shot the ball a lot better.
Yeah, first half pretty ugly. KU led 28-25. David McCormick, 19 of his 23 points in the second half. He had a double-double. He was fantastic in the second half, and they had no answer for him. I still don't understand why Coach Boynton didn't double McCormick, but he didn't, and he paid for it. And McCormick also 9-12 from the foul line. Much-needed win for the Jayhawks. And I got Iowa State coming up Thursday night, and then they got Iowa State on Saturday. So two very winnable games, although Iowa State's played better lately, but they're still winless in the Big 12. And right above Iowa State in the standings, ninth out of 10 teams, is Kansas State. K-State 1-10, 10 straight losses, 1-10 in the Big 12, 5-15 overall. They host number 13 Texas, who's lost three in a row. Texas now 11-5 and 5-4 in the Big 12. You can watch it on ESPN Plus tonight at 7 o'clock. Bruce Weber, his team meeting Texas for the second time this year.
They're a really good team. They're only going to give you so many chances to stay in the game. So hopefully we can do a little better the next time. But nothing gets any easier. But it doesn't matter. What matters is us and coming back and competing at a high level.
We'll talk more K-State athletics and men's basketball with Kellis Robinette coming up in about 15 minutes here on the ticket as he covers K-State for the Kansas City Star and the Wichita Eagle. Yesterday, John Kurtz, who we had on the show a few times from K-Man Radio in Manhattan, had a chance to interview athletic director Gene Taylor on his show. And John got right to it and asked Mr. Taylor about bringing Bruce Weber back next year.
It's certainly my plan and our plan. You know, I do this every year, and this is what I guess if I'm sounding frustrated, okay. I'm tired of talking about it, to be honest with you. But I sit down with every coach every year and evaluate the year. I didn't do it last year at the end of basketball season because COVID hit, right? It ended abruptly, and we didn't see anybody for several months. So I did not do it with Bruce last year or, you know, Jeff Mitty or anybody. But we'll do that, and I'll sit down and say, Bruce, how are we going to get better? What are we going to do next year? What happened this year? I'll ask all of those questions, and we'll have a good conversation and continue to talk about how we keep moving this program forward.
He was also asked about the buyout. Says he really doesn't can factor that in too much. It's a matter of whether or not we want a coach back or not. And Kansas State, sounds like Gene Taylor plans on bringing Bruce Weber back. So stay tuned on all that. I don't know how you bring back a coach if he doesn't win another game this year and goes 1-17 in the Big 12 and finishes 5-23. I don't know how you do it, especially after last year being really bad as well. I don't know how you do it, but Kansas State just might be the unique program in America. While coaches in football go fired at 6-4 and 7-3, K-State like, 5-25, that's cool. So I just don't know how you sell that to the fans if they are actually indeed allowed to come back to Bramlage. They're not even using their 1,500 tickets allotment now.
Yeah.
That you can get with sporadic crowds. So, I don't know. We've talked about it before. We'll talk to Kellis Robinette about it a little bit coming up here in about 15 minutes. Iowa State is at TCU tonight at 8 o'clock in the big game. Number 14, West Virginia at number 7, Texas Tech on ESPN tonight at 8 o'clock. That should be a good one. Baylor's postponing the next three games against Texas Tech and then two games against West Virginia, just the way the schedule worked with reschedules because of COVID. So Baylor's had to deal with this two or three times this year, which is unfortunate because they are maybe the best team in America, although Gonzaga's really good. Some Chiefs news. Patrick Mahomes will have toe surgery tomorrow. Has a torn plantar plate in his toe, commonly known as turf toe. He will have surgery tomorrow. He's expected to recover and be fine. And Mahomes was able to address the media yesterday and talk about that Super Bowl 55 loss to Tampa Bay and says, hey, this is going to motivate me not only next year, but the rest of my career.
Yeah, I mean, it'll definitely motivate you. I mean, if you're near a competitor and you get so close to your ultimate goal, and then you fall short, I mean, it's something that will motivate you for the rest of your career. I mean, it was a bad feeling in that locker room after the game. And you don't want to have that feeling again. And so, luckily enough, we'll have a lot of the same guys back. And we'll obviously add new guys and we'll set the tone from the beginning of the year, beginning of the off season, that we have to be better. We have to be better than we were this last year in order to go out there and win the Super Bowl.
The future is still bright for the Chiefs, of course. Mahomes won't turn 26 until September. Tyreek Hill's 26. Chris Jones is 26. Tyrann Mathieu, 28. But going into the final year of his three-year deal, Legarius Steed is 24. I think he could be a corner for the Chiefs for a while. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, of course, running back, is just 21. And all of those guys are under contract through at least 2022 for the next 2 years, except for Mathieu. But that guarantees the Chiefs nothing. We know that. They brought everybody back pretty much this year and lost it in the Super Bowl. Here are the list. Just a few of the guys that are potential unrestricted free agents. Of course, we know wide receiver Sammy Watkins, DeMarcus Robinson will be free agents. Center Austin Ryder, defensive ends Tanau Passanau and Alex Okafor, and corners Bashaun Breeland and safety Daniel Sorensen. The Chiefs have more than $200 million in salary cap commitments to 2021. That's more than $200 million. The cap is expected. They were hoping to be around 185. They should be in good shape, said Brett Veach. But the number came out the other day. They said 181, which I would think you could trim the $4 million that you need. So the Chiefs are in a tough, tight salary cap situation, which is very – I mean, once again, though, you could take Schwartz and Rich Fisher off the books. I don't know how much dead money there is there. You can rework deals. There's ways to do this. Like last year, the Chiefs had, what, $22 in their account or something in the cap, and then they somehow were able to re-sign everybody. So there's ways to make it happen. I guess the question is, of those guys we just mentioned, you know, Sammy Watkins, DeMarcus Robinson, Austin Ryder, Tanau Passanau, Alex Okafor, Bashaun Breeland, and Daniel Sorensen, which guy of that group do you want to bring back? Like, I'm not talking about want. I'm talking about want and can bring back financially.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I don't worry about Watkins anymore, although I think he could come back on a one-year, $1 million incentive-based deal that where he could make four or five. I think that's possible. I don't think there's going to be much of an interest in Sammy Watkins. DeMarcus Robinson, I'm okay with him just leaving. Austin Ryder, I think he could be replaced, but I think they can keep him. Tanau Passanau and Alex Okafor, I'm guessing one of those guys won't be back, maybe both. Bashaun Breeland, you know, he came back after not getting a multi-year deal they thought he might get. I don't know if he'll come back on another one-year deal. And then Sorensen, I think, is a guy that could get some money on the open market because of some of the big plays he's made. And that's a guy I think the Chiefs would like to keep. So I think Sorensen would be the one that they'd want to keep the most out of that whole group.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
Yeah. Who would be the next guy that you'd want to keep out of that group?
Like, Passanau might be a guy because he's younger.
Yeah.
if you're only going to keep maybe one of those guys, like you said, mm-hmm. Lofer and him. I don't know. I mean, if you feel like you can replace Ryder, it's not like a necessity to keep him around.
Right. I think Breland, if you get him back on a good deal, that gives you that depth at corner. I mean, you got Snead and Fenton in the wings, though. So, so the Chiefs, they got some decisions. Of course, they're going to have to bring in, at least one or two tackles, whether it's a draft or a free agency signing, because Schwartz, if you just don't know if he's going to be ready to go next year. Do you roll the dice on him with a bad back?
Yeah.
And then, you know, he should be ready to go next year, but you don't know. And then Fisher won't be able to go till maybe late next year with a torn Achilles. So Chiefs have some decisions to make, no question about it. They will not have 20 of their 22 starters back next year. It'll be different. Sad news pass along to you. Former Kansas City Chiefs head coach Marty Schottenheimer, Marty Ball, as it was known, passed away peacefully at the age of 77. He was just admitted into hospice care, I think, the other day. Mm-hmm. Alzheimer's, he'd been battling. I grew up with Marty Schottenheimer in regards to... Marty Schottenheimer is one of the most unluckiest coaches I've ever seen in my life. In regards to, he was an unbelievable coach that won a ton of games. But you had the drive with John Elway that beat him, and the fumble by Ernest Biner that beat him. That was no fault of Marty Schottenheimer in either one of those. Mm-hmm. Browns could easily have been in the Super Bowl twice there. I've never made it because of those crazy things that happened that benefited the Broncos. You know, the drive was amazing by Elway. The fumble was just bad luck for Ernest Biner. I'll never forget that, of course. And then we talked about the Charger game where he had told the guy, if you get an interception, you go down. The guy didn't listen to him. And then Brady and the Pats got the ball back and upset the Chargers, who were 14-2 that year. And then they blew Marty out after a 14-2 season. They fired him because the general manager and the owner didn't apparently get along with Marty, which is unfortunate. You know, the Chiefs have had all the success lately. The Chiefs made a Super Bowl back-to-back years, right? And Andy Reid gets a lot of credit for that, and rightfully so. The Chiefs were 2-14 when Andy took over. I don't think the Chiefs would be where they are today without Marty Schottenheimer. And here's why I say that. The Chiefs organization was not known for winning football when Marty Schottenheimer took over in 1989. Yeah. The Chiefs were a mess. They had Frank Gans as a coach. They 1986, they made the playoffs. It was kind of fluky. They were not a team that won. You know, they didn't win their division every year. They were not like they were until Marty got there. Mm-hmm. And Marty came over from Cleveland because he had, you know, it run its course in Cleveland, kind of like Andy Reid ran his course in Philadelphia. He came to Kansas City. They always had good defenses. They ran the ball. It was called Marty Ball. Ball control. They had Christian Okoye, Barry Word. They had a great running backs. Had a really, and we talked about yesterday, they had a great offensive line. And yet they never won a playoff game with Marty. Never. With the Chiefs. Did they win a playoff?
Yeah, they won
game?
Playoff.
They won playoff
the
game.
AFC Championship.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They did because Montana won two. Mm-hmm. Without Montana, he would have had one win, and that was in '86 against the Raiders. And Todd Marinovich was a quarterback of the Raiders, so he won three games. But his postseason record is 3-7, which is really poor, because they had the number one seed a couple times. They were 13-3, had home field advantage, and couldn't win at Arrowhead. And that's what I remember, not winning games in '95 mm-hmm. and '97. He had a first round bye. And one of the reasons, bad luck again, Lynn Elliott, you know, missed three field goals, lost to the Colts. Then there was a really bad call in the Bronco game that didn't call interference when Gonzalez was interfered in end zone. But then Marty made a mistake. I thought you should have stuck with Rich Gannon, and he mm-hmm. went to Elvis Gerbach. So that was on Marty there. Gannon played that game. I think the Chiefs win, and who knows what would have happened in 97. I've talked to James Hastie and Neil Smith about this when I lived in Kansas City. Got to meet them and talked and interviewed them, and they told me, you know, off the record, we weren't recording, that the entire team wanted Rich Gannon to be the quarterback, and they weren't happy when Elvis Gerbach, you know, he can't lose his job due to injury. Well, Rich Gannon led us to that record. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, Elvis got the start. And Gannon almost came through with and pinch hitting late in that game and nearly won the game anyway. So Marty made a major mistake there. There's no doubt about it. But Marty was a great coach. I mean, from 1989 to 1998, during his 10-year tenure with the Chiefs, he won 101 games, lost 58. That was 63% winning percentage. And here's pretty amazing stuff here, is that the Chiefs won at least 10 games in six of his first nine seasons with the team, which established them as an AFC power for the better part of a decade. And, of course, when they really got good, they brought in Marcus Allen, they brought in Joe Montana in 1993, as we know. They won two playoff games, made it to the AFC title game. Montana got knocked out with a concussion there early in the second half, and then David Craig came in, and the Chiefs just didn't have enough firepower. His career record For Marty Schottenheimer's 200 and 126. He was head coach with the Browns, the Redskins, the Chargers, and of course the Chiefs. And he's been battling Alzheimer's in recent years and was placed in hospice care earlier this month. And he'll be remembered as a Chiefs legend, one of the truly great head coaches in NFL history. No doubt he will. No doubt he will. It's just too bad that he couldn't at least have made it to a Super Bowl, let alone win a Super Bowl. And he had teams that were good enough, and he had some really bad luck. Like I said, the Biner fumble, you know, Elway breaking our heart with the drive, the 98-yard drive. And then, of course, the Charger player not going down. Then Lynn Elliott breaking their heart. And then, you know, they making the mistake of not starting the right quarterback with a dominant defense against the Broncos. And the Broncos went and won the Super Bowl that year, and the Chiefs could have easily been in that spot. And so Marty was a great coach, and it's really sad to see him pass away and suffer from Alzheimer's. But he did pass away peacefully at the age of 77.
Yeah, it's a man. You have a lot of memories of him as a coach of the Chiefs, and you know, obviously seemed like a great guy and a great coach, and it just like you said, didn't always work out for him in the end when it counted. But you don't hold that against a guy that had the success that he had and understand what he actually meant to your franchise at the time.
He hated the Raiders. I mean, yeah. He loved Raider Week. I've heard so many former Chief players say Raider Week was completely different. Marty just. There was a spell there. Marty said, listen, guys, all we got to do is play well and wait for them to screw it up. Yeah. Remember that line? I'm like, you're right. He was right. His teams were usually well-disciplined and didn't have tons of penalties. And then at the end there, at the end of the tenure, it was, you know, he kind of run his course there in Kansas City. And then there was some pressure. And then Carl Peterson had the, you know, the five-year Super Bowl plan that turned into infinity and never happened. And it was Marty and Carl that came together. I mean, Carl brought in Marty. So, you know, you should get credit for that. Carl Peterson wasn't well-liked by a lot of people, but he changed around Kansas. He along with Marty, changed Kansas City Chiefs football. And I don't think the Chiefs are where they are today because, you know, does Andy Reid come flying into Kansas City to be head coach of the Chiefs after 2-14 season if the Chiefs have been bad for all those years, if Marty didn't come in and turn it around?
Probably not.
I'm going to say maybe not.
And,
so,
you know, and it's a team that had success with Vermeil, too, you know, and it's not a team that was like, you know,
but would Vermeil have gone there? You know? Had Vermeil exactly, gone there without Marty doing what he did?
And I don't think he would have either.
Yeah. No, yeah. I don't think so.
Wasn't a wasteland. So, yeah, but with Marty, it was, I'm coming here to turn this around.
Every year they're right there for the division title, and every year they were, I mean, they were a top seed multiple times. It just didn't work out in the end for Super Bowls. This was interesting. I was listening to my friend Saran Petra, 810 WHB in Kansas City, a little bit yesterday. And we brought this up yesterday briefly. We had so many things that we covered in regards to Super Bowl 55. We didn't have a chance to elaborate on this. Andy Reid's son, Brett Reid, was involved in a car accident. He had bloodshot eyes, according to a report. He admitted to having 2 to 3 drinks. He also, in combination with prescription drug Adderall, he's in the hospital right now. He had a surgery, don't know what for. But two youngsters were hurt in the accident, including a 5-year-old girl who I believe hasn't come to yet, who is in still critical condition. And who knows what the charges will be against Andy Reid's son, who was also the outside linebackers coach for the Chiefs. He did not make the trip to Tampa for Super Bowl 55. This happened late Thursday night. The news broke, of course, on Friday, and it was not a good time for that at all, obviously, for the team and focusing on everything at hand, although the bigger focus should be on that little girl and hopefully that she survives and makes it. But the question that was posed yesterday was, did Britt Reid's accident impact the Chiefs? And, you know, we didn't have time to talk about much yesterday, but you think about this, and this is only human nature, and we've seen some weird things happen. I said it earlier last week that you want to avoid some bad thing happening. Like, you're not going to be in Miami all week long. Remember the Cincinnati Bengal guy that, like, went AWOL? Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, there's guys that got in trouble partying in Miami before and got in trouble or didn't get to play in the Super Bowl. I mean, there's stories of distractions. And we figured there'd be no distractions because you're not going down till Saturday.
Yeah.
And yet the Chiefs had to deal with distraction because Andy Reid's son was irresponsible, allegedly, with what he did. And listen, there's no doubt Andy Reid had to be distracted. I mean, how could you not? It's human nature. If you care about your son, you got to be distracted. Did it distract him in making decisions during the Super Bowl? Only Andy Reid could tell you that. Did it distract the team? Because I'm sure they were asked a few questions about that, although it wasn't like it would have been had they been down in Miami. I think you have to look at the Chiefs game and go, the Chiefs didn't come out with as much energy and fire as you would have expected. I thought they were a little bit flat. Was that because they flew in on Saturday and they weren't there the whole week to get acclimated to the surroundings? Was it because the distraction of Britt Reid being in that accident or feeling bad for Andy? Or it just put things in perspective, like, this game's great and all, but it has nothing. It means nothing when a five-year-old girl is, you know, fighting for her life. And I heard Seren talk about it yesterday, and I can't disagree with him. He believes that the Chiefs, it was an impact on the game. He believes that the Chiefs, there were distractions, that the Chiefs weren't as fired up, that was a Debbie Downer situation, obviously. The thoughts of these players are with that five-year-old girl. Also, you don't have a familiar face coaching you on the staff. And Britt Reid, you notice that he's gone, although I'm not going to say he's the most important coach, obviously not. I don't think it impacted the way the team played at the linebacker position or anything like that. But it does make you, you know, it does make you wonder. And I'm going to say this. I don't know. I think Andy Reid's the only one that could honestly tell you, and the players could actually tell you off the record, because they probably won't tell you on the record it was a problem. But, and I think there was something to it. I don't know how big of an impact it had on the game, because I don't want to take away from what the Bucs did, because they were the better team. But I think human nature tells you there's an impact. There's an effect. And it's unfortunate that's what the Chiefs had to go through. But before, and I have to really catch myself, because I feel like I'm a big Chiefs fan. I want the Chiefs to win. And I talked about not wanting to have distractions, and I didn't think there would be any because they weren't in Miami all week long, and they flew in on Saturday. And then, boom, that story broke. And the first thought I had was, that's great. That's all this team needs is a distraction going into trying to repeat as Super Bowl champions. And then I read more of the story, and I'm like, okay, now I'm a maroon, because that shouldn't even matter. The game shouldn't matter. I mean, if that was my five-year-old daughter, I wouldn't give a flippin' woohoo about whatever game, even if I was the biggest Chiefs fan. So that should be the number one concern. And I have to wonder if some of the Chiefs players thought the same thing, is that they go into this game like, hey, we know we're going to win, but you know what? There are bigger things in life. We know that with COVID-19. And now there's a little girl that's fighting for her life because one of our coaches, you know, had an accident and ran into him while they're sitting on the exit ramp. I do think there was an impact. The question is, how big of an impact was it? Did it cause the Chiefs to start flat? Did the players were they not focused because of that? You'd have to ask the players. You have to ask the coach. I think human nature tells you there had to have been some kind of effect or impact. We just don't know to what extent.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with all that. I mean,
because the Bucs did not have that distraction.
It doesn't matter who you are. I mean,
right.
if something affects you on a personal level like that, because, I mean, that's their guy. It's his son. It's their coach. Obviously, there's some personal connection to it. And so anything like that happens, there will be, I don't care who you are, there's an effect. I mean, that's, like you said, human nature. I've gone through it on different things. When I'm doing a game, you know, I hear about something during the day and it affects me. I'm not even playing a game. I'm not even important to the game, right, other than calling it. But, you know, there's no matter what work you do, I think you can be affected by it if something happens like that in your life.
Yeah, I think it's just human nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, whether or not that cost the Chiefs a Super Bowl, I don't think we could go that far unless the players and the coach believe that. And they're not going to tell you that.
They'll never say that publicly.